This is Cincinnati Edition for a Monday afternoon on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Purzel. Coming up, a story that was inspired by a mistaken spell check. Writer Robin Sloan will be in the studio for a conversation about his first novel, Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore. He was an early employee of Twitter and is a self-described media inventor, so how did, in his digital world, did he find his first book come to be released first as a printed hard copy? You'll find out. And speaking of books, thanks to everyone who was at the Books by the Bank Cincinnati Book Festival on Saturday. It was amazing to see all the readers and writers and book illustrators just having a wonderful time, and gratifying to see a slew of young readers out celebrating books, too. I had the honor of hosting the author session with James McBride, who was a riot talking about his new novel, The Good Lord Bird. And by the way, book lovers, the Public Library of Cincinnati and Hamilton County celebrates its 160th anniversary this Saturday, the main branch downtown. But on to the first subject of the day, the city's history in 50 objects. For the October issue, Cincinnati Magazine set out to find 50 things that tell the story of our city. Some are ordinary, some remarkable, but all capture events that made us who we are today. What's it like to trace the history of a city in just 50 objects? How can you accommodate more than two centuries of growth in such a few items? Here to talk about the process, what made the cut, and what might have been missed, is Cincinnati Magazine Deputy Editor Amanda Boyd-Walters and Senior Editor R.J. Smith. You can be part of the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk@wvxu.org, posting on Facebook, or tweeting at 917WVXU. Well, Amanda, R.J., welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
Oh, good to be here.
So I want to ask about how this cover article, the city's history and 50 objects, came to be. What, you know, I know the impetus was a couple of years ago. I did an interview on Cincinnati Edition about the BBC's History of the World in 100 Objects. Why did y'all decide to do the same with Cincinnati, but only in 50?
Well, we thought that it would be a lot of fun to visually represent the history of Cincinnati, to do it in a way that was a little bit more fun and a little bit more interesting than, you know, like book reports or history stories that, you know, those can be great, but to show the objects that were there, that the stories behind them, I think that can be so powerful and so fascinating. And so we started out to pull that all together, and it was quite an undertaking from beginning to end.
Well, and RJ, I know you a recent arrival in Cincinnati, if you may. You still knew a lot about Cincinnati through your work writing your book about James Brown, so I imagine this was an interesting exercise for you too.
Oh, it was a great way to learn about the city by going deep research and looking at objects up close, things that are either very big or very small, and trying to understand what they mean to people.
I wanted to ask what kind of criteria you had in deciding what is in an object. You know, how did you, as you set out on this experiment, define what an object is?
Well, we started out, the kind of idea that I was using from the beginning, and we talked about this a lot, was everything from a trilobite fossil to a cheese coney. And if you open the magazine, those are the first two images that you see from the story. But it had to be an actual object. It couldn't be a building. Like so many people, when I was describing this, said, oh, the Union Terminal or the suspension bridge. And while we love those buildings, bridges, those pieces of architecture that make our city so what it is, those we were trying to get something a little bit more intimate and to really kind of personalize, in a way, the history of the city.
Did you feel that constrained you at all in trying to limit it? Because, of course, you know, people when they you have Union Terminal, you have the suspension bridge, you have Fountain Square, you know. did you feel constrained?
I think the number was the big constraint. We sat around coming up with lists and lists and lists of all the great stuff we wanted to put in here. And then to cut it down to just 50, which is a lot, was really complicated.
Yeah, because you start out with so many possibilities and so many different directions that you can go, and you want to make sure that you've got like the big stuff covered. You know, the Reds have to be in there, Rookwood has to be in there, but you want to leave room for some little surprises too. You want to see like that baby shoe from Mary Ludlow from 1791 when she was born, and you know, you want to see those kinds of things, the beanbag bullet from the 2001 riots. You want to see those surprising things that are like, oh wow, that's what that looks like. So, you know, you have to balance a lot of different things to get down to that 50.
Well, you know, the trilobite fossil that you use is rather large, and you know, well, the size of a coney. But what was the limits? You know, the size. Okay, it has to be smaller than Union Terminal, and larger than a microbe, I imagine. But I mean, what kind of range did you decide on?
What is the biggest item that we have?
That's a good question. I think that it's probably the mastodon. Jawbone, because that one, I mean, it was, I'm moving my hands back and forth and no one can see me do that, but it was probably, you know, it was a couple feet long and maybe 18 or so inches wide. I mean, it was massive. It took three people to take it out of the cabinet. Like, we're in the Geyer Center, which is where Museum Center stores many of their objects and artifacts. And there are three people lifting this giant thing out of the bottom of a cabinet and putting it down on the floor right in front of it. And the photographer is standing. There's like 40 people around this little tiny thing. And I think that is probably physically the biggest, heaviest for sure.
And what I found fascinating about that, reading the 50 history of Cincinnati and 50 objects in the October issue of Cincinnati Magazine, was the fact that that was found in Cincinnati. Now, this was not Big Bone Lick, where they pulled out lots and lots of bones, but this came from inside Cincinnati proper.
Hyde Park, Shawn Observatory Avenues. I mean,
represent.
Exactly. It was really funny.
Well, amazing. So I guess there might be some kids in Hyde Park digging in their backyard when they learn that as it goes along. Well, you mentioned the Geyer collection at Cincinnati Museum Center. You had plenty of resources here, it looks like, when you went looking for these things. And I guess to find these objects, that's where you had to go, is find these collections, right?
Collections and just books and asking people, you know, family and friends, and what do you want to see in this issue? There was a lot.
Yeah. I mean, we're lucky that we have such fantastic museums and collections, and not even just museums and collections, but people. Kevin Grace over at UC, who is the archivist over there, has his own opened his personal collection to us and allowed us to borrow some objects from him. And he was just the sweetest and a complete doll. And everybody that I worked with on this project lending us objects was super excited to, you know, oh, do you want to see this? I have this other thing. Do you want to see this other thing? It was so great to see everybody so excited about it.
I guess that added to those 50, you know, that long list that you had to pare down to 50 as it goes along. I'm speaking with Amanda Boyd-Walters and RJ Smith from Cincinnati Magazine about the cover story of the October issue, A History of Cincinnati and 50 Objects. You can chime in with what you think needs to be on that list or needed to be on that list by calling us at 513-419-7100 or emailing us talk@wvxu.org. Now, was there, one email says, was there one object that had to be first that everyone said that must be included above all others? The Holy Grail. Was it that coney?
Well, I think it was the fossil and the coney. I think those were the two things that I really wanted to have. But when I found out about the baby shoe, I think that was my object that I was like, I want this in here no matter what. That was my favorite one, I think.
Well, we were talking about size just a moment ago, and on Facebook, Noel suggests a streetcar from the Cincinnati Street Railway. That's not on the thing. Would that have been too large an object?
I think for the way that we wanted to photograph things, it might have been. But that is definitely something that would fit in this 50 objects kind of story. That would be something that would be really fun.
Part of the history, of course. And then how do you take a picture of a subway that never went anywhere? That's a part of the history, at least the lore, as it goes along. I wanted to say, you mentioned the trilobite already, but I noticed you kind of begin at the beginning on a timeline, if you may, for the most part. Did you consciously want to make sure that they were organized linearly? You know, it's not all the way linear, but no, you know, relatively so.
Loosely. We wanted to try and have it make sense instead of jumping around too crazily across time. I think there are some places where we mix things up a little bit, but that was kind of out of necessity, whether we had objects that were similar in size. You know, there's a lot that goes into, you pick the objects, you take the photographs, you arrange them on the page. We kept adding pages to this story, and at one point I finally said, never has 24 pages felt so small.
yeah.
as it goes along. Well, I wanted to say, you know, you really started at the bedrock with the trilobite, with the mastodon jaw. But then when human beings began to show up, it was interesting to see what do you consider the most important part of the early, you know, human existence in Cincinnati that you had to include? Because there are a couple of things there that are very important. You mentioned the shoe.
Yes, the baby shoe for Mary Ludlow. I think that the Cincinnati tablet, that's a really interesting story. That's a very interesting story. It's about 3x5. It's a little tablet that's got some carving design on it, and it was found in a burial mound, basically where the UPS parking lot is down in Queensgate, and nobody really knows what it was for or what it means. It just kind of shows that there were people here that we know nothing about, and that, you know, that's part of our history too, and it's just a great mystery to keep people guessing.
Well, and that's part of our history has disappeared, like the streetcar
that we just
mentioned. That the streetcar was there, and as I recall, there was a big Adena burial mound right in the middle of downtown Cincinnati, along Fifth Street, if mm-hmm. I'm not mistaken, or something back in that time.
And there's one in Marymount.
Right, that's still going. So how did you, you know, what do you consider the most hidden piece of history that you found for these 50 objects? You know, something that people wouldn't know. I mean, I did not know about that Cincinnati tablet. I found that fascinating to find out about that.
Well, one that I wouldn't call it hidden. It's probably the opposite of hidden to anyone who grew up here and lived here. But one that I'm wrapping my brain around still is Ruth Lyon's bouquet.
Yes. Now, the bouquet with her microphone in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like something Agent 007 would use. Or, you know, I get it when I read about it and hear about it, but I need to see it on a file of film or something to really understand what it would have been like to see her on TV.
Carrying that. Oh, I guess you're much too young to remember that, RJ?
I just happened to grow up somewhere else.
We're talking about the 50 objects in a history of Cincinnati and 50 objects with Amanda Boyd Walters and senior editor RJ Smith from Cincinnati Magazine. You can chime in on a line on the phone online at talk@wvxu.org or on the phone at 419-715-7100. And Christian from Clifton is on the phone. Good afternoon, Christian.
Hello.
Hi there. You're on the air.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
I wanted to contribute to the conversation by saying that the Cincinnati's Hillside Stairways are probably one of the most special attributes for describing how we really developed out of the basin areas and into the hillsides, and that was one of the only options for moving through the neighborhoods at one point. So in terms of a found object, very insignificant on the surface, but you can find these brackets that connect the handrails to each other at many of the hillside stairways today. They're no longer used, but you can still find them tossed aside when scrappers are trying to pull away some of the safety constraints that we have. But it's really has the city of Cincinnati insignia on it, and it's uniquely Cincinnati, and we have over 400 stairways that are in dire need of repair or are plentifully enjoyed by many of our residents for recreation. So Spring in Our Steps is an organization that I co-founded to clean up stairways as well as alleyways, and we pride ourselves on kind of bringing back a piece of Cincinnati's history.
Well, thank you, Christian, for both your work on that and the suggestion. And that is now does that fall in line, Amanda, RJ, more with almost Union Terminal because it is large? I mean, I like he's saying, you know, a small bracket off the handrail that does make
the
sense.
The bracket, I think that works. But I think that the thing that is even more interesting is, like he said, this is part of us moving out of the basin. And I think that's the coolest part about it is that it's what it says about our history and the story behind it. And, you know, it could just be the bracket with the city of Cincinnati thing on it, but, you know, it's what it says. That's the cool part.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Christian. I appreciate that. If you have a suggestion about one of the 50 objects that make up a history of Cincinnati, give us a call at 513-419-7155. Cincinnati Magazine Deputy Editor Amanda Boyd Walters and Senior Editor RJ Smith here discovering the cover story of the October issue. If you have a suggestion, give us a call. We'll be back after a short break with more Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 and 88.5. I'm Mark Purcell. The author of the best-selling novel, Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore, Robin Sloan, on the way in about 20 minutes. But right now, Amanda Boyd-Walters and R.J. Smith from Cincinnati Magazine are in the studio with me to talk about the city's history in 50 objects, the cover story for Cincinnati Magazine's October issue. What would you include among those 50 objects? What might have been overlooked? Join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, emailing talk at wvxu.org, posting on Facebook, or by tweeting at 917-WVXU. Now, Christian, just a moment ago, was talking about the stairs around Cincinnati, over 400 sets of stairs coming out of the basin and moving up. And it occurred to me along the lines of the Noel's suggestion about the streetcars, the inclines were so many of the inclines that we didn't have. But again, was that something a little too large or now too far gone?
Well, some of it maybe is you get these processes or these big ideas about that change the city and develop the city. And you say, we've got to get that in here somehow. And then you go to, well, where is an object or an image or an artifact that does make sense for us that can capture some of that? If not the whole streetcar, you know, maybe it's a token or something.
Along the lines. And by the way, Cincinnati Magazine is asking for your submissions of photos of objects that make up the DNA of our city on their website, which you can find a link to through our website, wvxu.org. And you mentioned the streetcar token. I know there's a Metro bus token that someone has submitted, Mustang Sally, that used to be on the roof of a club across the river.
Yes, down in Newport, yes.
And a couple of others. And you can see those online at the Cincinnati Magazine website. Again, linked through our website, wvxu.org. Kara hasn't seen the article yet, but she says she hopes beer was included. Can't do without it. And indeed, beer was included here.
Well, it was included in putting together the issue.
Okay. Well, she can roll out the barrel because, yes, there is beer that is included. We managed to find in the collection of the Museum Center an array of beer bottles in different forms from the late 1880s to the 1950s, representing all different brewers from across the spectrum. One of the examples that we show, the Brucks beer, that's the Bruckman Brewing Company. They were the first brewers to restart their production after Prohibition because they had stayed in the business doing near beer. So when they found out that it was going to be repealed, they were able to ramp up their production of the actual beer and be spot on the market when repeal came through.
Well, I want to, this leads me to ask where there are, really 9 beer bottles for, you know, number 25 in the list of 50. But they're all, those 9 are considered one. But then you did the Cincinnati Reds and you have 10 objects and kind of, you know, 10 objects there. What's the thought process behind the collections as you go?
Well, the Reds, obviously, they have more than one thing that's notable about them. I mean, they're the World Series wins, the number of World Series wins. They're the first team, you know, the first professional baseball team. And we wanted to make sure that places like that had more than one. You know, it's hard to distill that all of that down into a single ball or a single glove or a single baseball card.
Like, true.
I think that would sort of minimize the experience a little bit for people. And, you know, with the other couple places we did that, the gambling museum, I mean, that just all of the different, the brass knuckles and the zip gun with the fat that looks like a fountain pen. I mean, yes. it sounds, you cannot make this stuff up.
Well, what did you enjoy most? What was y'all's, each of you, which was your favorite object out of the 50 that were there?
Well, I enjoyed thinking about and trying to understand the genius of water, the Fountain Square monument. You know, I moved here a year ago, and every day I see this towering woman with water pouring out of her palms. And on the one hand, I take it for granted. It's part of my landscape. On the other hand, I don't know, why is she there? What does she mean? And whoever she was, did she ever guess that a century later, you know, Bootsy Collins would be doing the chicken dance beneath her arms?
So that, and actually on the list is the model for the fountain that was there to bring outdoor drinking fountains to Cincinnati, as I learned. So you learned a little bit here, RJ, about it.
I did as much research as I could. And the funny thing for me is about everyone that I looked at and wrote up, there is like a myth or a legend or a might-be-true story or a too-good-to-be-true story.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody else coming in and, you know, well, what really happened was this. And, you know, what do you do? It's so complicated trying to figure out, are you dealing with the myth, and which is a part of the story, or do you just report the facts, ma'am? Ivory soap has its myth. The fountain has its myth. Lots of myths.
You, Amanda?
Oh, gosh. I love them all. I mean, I do. I do. It was just so much fun. But I think there are a couple. The baby shoe that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
I also really am charmed by the wedding dress.
Because
that's a part of history that I was completely unaware of. I mean, everybody understands that this was a great arts and crafts mecca. We had the art-carved furniture. We had the Rookwood pottery. We had the art academy and all of that kind of artistry. But we also had women in business for themselves as dressmakers, creating these wearable works of art. I mean, this was a society season that included debutante balls and weddings and all kinds of different events that you would have to have clothes for. And these women were making these dresses. And we have a wedding dress in the story that was made locally by a local dressmaker for a local woman. And when I found out, I found their wedding date and found that they got married in October, I was like, this is a sign. We have to use this dress.
Well, it was very interesting to see. That was an aspect of Cincinnati history I wasn't aware of. And over 1,500 seamstresses, I believe, that were working in Cincinnati back around the turn of the 20th century, as I recall. All those debutante balls, as you mentioned, and all. And yes, there's no flying pig in the story, but there is some butchering implements and the Khan's apron and things representing that. Mm-hmm. And by the way, in talking about the brewing history of Cincinnati on Wednesday's Cincinnati edition, Mark Haney will be talking about the city's beer brewing and boxing tradition. So kind of ties in with what's represented here, because you have Ezra Charles represented on the list as well as it goes along. Is there an object on the list that was tied to the river? There are many things that I didn't notice. What could you, if you're doing it down, there's not necessarily a steamboat. Delta Queen's not here anymore. Showboat Majestic might be, but was there any tie to mentioned the genius of water there, RJ. That got me thinking about the river, because that's an important part of who we are.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think there's anything that ties directly. I think that was one of our great... Well, I mean, unless you count the Sims purchase document.
True.
Which
very
is
true.
The land between the rivers. We did have hopes that we would be able to find a canal boatman's shirt. One of our editors had heard that object had been around in a collection somewhere, and we tried to track it down, and unfortunately, you know, that's an everyday working man's piece of clothing, and so that's not something that as opposed to a wedding dress that gets worn one time or maybe twice, and you know, like if it's passed down to a daughter, you know, the heavy wear objects don't stand up very well.
No. And you know, you don't use that wedding dress as often you hope as you would the other. Yeah, but yes, the Miami purchase contract, that's true, that is tied to the rivers, because that was it Sims, John Cleve Sims, who did the land purchase between the Great Miami and the Little Miami.
Exactly.
Of course, that ran into some frustration for him, though.
Well, yes. You know, when you don't measure things properly and you sell land that's not yours to sell, and people tend to get a little heated about that. And unfortunately, that caused some problems for him for the remainder of his life.
Well, I will direct this at each of you again. What was the 51st object on the list that you wanted that didn't make it? You know, it might not be the same one. I won't ask what exactly the 51st was, but with each of you, what do you think?
One thing that I was lobbying for, the Magic 8 Ball, which was invented and marketed here, and which millions of people ever since have turned upside down and tried to figure out, do I go left or right today? I do it. When I put my list together, I'll put that one on there.
So the Magic 8 Ball. And you, Amanda?
Oh, gosh. There are so many different people and places and things that we, either couldn't find something from, you know, Daniel Drake had such a big impact on our history. We didn't have anything from Daniel Drake. I don't know that there was any one specific thing that got left off. I just kind of wish that, you know, I wish we had more than just those 24 pages.
Oh, you're such a good mom. Such a good mom, not picking your favorite child. Well, I was struck also as I read through this article, how many names pop out? I just mentioned John Cleves Sims. Well, there are Sims and Cleves. You know, you mentioned Ludlow, Mary Ludlow's slipper there. And William Lytle, who you represent him with a bejeweled Maltese cross. And he was a fascinating character in the Civil War.
That's
absolutely
right. Well, he was, he was a scholar. He was a lawyer. He was born into a prominent family. And he was a poet. He was one of the most famous poets from the region and in the country at that point. And then he went to war. And he didn't return. And this was a Maltese cross that his men, who admired and respected him, gave him just weeks before he died on the battlefield. Yeah, I mean, you look at the objects in your attic or your garage or whatever, somebody else looks at them and it's just kind of a bunch of stuff. But you live here and you look at these objects and you see the whole history.
It's interesting to see all the names that, you know, where we get the names for so many things as it goes along. And the nature of some of these objects. Now, you mentioned that there were some things like the canalman's shirt that you couldn't find. What else did you think, you know, you wanted to include but couldn't find the object? I mean, even with the great collection at the Museum Center or up at the university or anywhere.
I think it's more that there were just so many other examples of different kinds of things that we could have also included. We could, you know, the city of Cincinnati has its very own fossil. It looks like a starfish. We could have included that too. There are, you know, other things like that where there were, you know, more and different objects from the history of the Cincinnati Reds that could have made it in there, but we couldn't include everything. So it's, you know, things like that that kind of, you wish that you had all the pages in the world to put everything together, but then it's, no, you know, it's the in the choices that things get fun. You have to make those choices.
If you have a suggestion for the 50 objects that define Cincinnati or Cincinnati's history, give us a call, 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. Or if you have an object that you want to submit, remember you can submit it to the Cincinnati Magazine website. You can find a link to that through our website, wvxu.org. Of the objects that are here in the article, what was the most difficult to get to put in the article?
Wow.
Or was it easy? Were they all very easy to find?
It wasn't that it was easy or hard. I think the one that made me the most nervous, honestly, was the Beverly Hills matchbook.
Really?
Because I saw it on eBay, and then I went back to buy it, and it was gone.
Really?
Yes, because we knew we wanted something from Beverly Hills because that was such a defining moment in, you know, for a number of reasons. It was a terrible tragedy, the nightclub fire that killed so many people, but it also sort of ushered in a new era of, you know, class action lawsuits and all of those kinds of consumer protections that are there because of that. I felt like we wanted something, and just to have that matchbook, and then when it was gone, I was just, oh no. What have I done?
Oh, curse you, eBay.
I should have clicked buy it now.
So how were you able to include it?
We found another collector who had similar objects, and we managed to purchase another one.
Well, I know the Beverly Hills Supper Club fire and tragedy happened before I moved back to live in Cincinnati. But I wasn't aware that it was, an illegal casino before it became the Supper Club, before it was kind of legitimate. And that was a little bit of history that I found. What in our history did you discover? I know, RJ, okay, you're giving you kind of a newbie here. But Amanda, what did you find, you know, most fascinating about our history through your research for this article?
I think all of the connections that just kind of kept coming up. The Grace Young decorated Rookwood vase. Well, as we dug into that, we realized, oh, she studied at the Art Academy under Duveneck. Oh, we have Duveneck's sketchbook in this story. You know, it's just all of those little kinds of things, how everything was so connected.
Maggie in Mount Auburn, you're on Cincinnati to Get Edition. Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon.
And what object do you have to offer for us today?
Actually, I was curious to see if anything related to William Howard Taft was included, since it's his birthplace, and I live two blocks away from that house.
Well, William Howard Taft actually is well represented here with some old campaign buttons. And Amanda, RJ, I found this interesting. I didn't realize that William Howard Taft didn't want to be president. He really wanted to be on the Supreme Court and eventually got his wish.
He did. He was kind of uncomfortable with the whole idea of the presidency. But I think his wife was kind of really into the idea that he be the chief executive.
The woman behind the man, is that the case?
If there'd been more space, we might have put the tub that Taft got stuck in as the 51st option, but I have to leave it for online.
Well, amazing stuff here. Thank you very much for sharing and both being here today. I appreciate it.
It's wonderful to be
thanks
here.
Thanks for having us.
I've been speaking with Deputy Editor Amanda Boyd Walters and Senior Editor RJ Smith from Cincinnati Magazine. You can upload photos of objects that you think help tell the history of the Queen City at the Cincinnati Magazine website, which again you can link through through our website, wvxu.org. Thanks, Amanda, and thanks, RJ. It's been a pleasure. Good to have you back on Cincinnati Edition.